Penguin Audio presents Between Shades of Grey by Ruta Sepetys. Read by Emily Klein. Part 1. Thieves and Prostitutes. Chapter 1. They took me in my nightgown. Thinking back, the signs were there. Family photos burned in the fireplace. Mother sewing her best silver and jewelry into the lining of her coat late at night. And Papa not returning from work. My younger brother Jonas was asking questions. I asked questions too, but perhaps I refused to acknowledge the signs. Only later did I realize that Mother and Father intended we escape. We did not escape. We were taken. June 14, 1941. I had changed into my nightgown and settled in at my desk to write my cousin Joanna a letter. I opened a new ivory writing tablet and a case of pens and pencils, a gift from my aunt for my 15th birthday. The evening breeze floated through the open window over my desk, waltzing the curtain from side to side. I could smell the lily of the valley that Mother and I had planted 2 years ago. Dear Joanna, it wasn't a knocking. It was an urgent booming that made me jump in my chair. Fists pounded on our front door. No one stirred inside the house. I left my desk and peered out into the hallway. My mother stood flat against the wall facing our framed map of Lithuania. Her eyes closed and her face pulled with an anxiety I had never seen. She was praying. "Mother," said Jonas, only one of his eyes visible through the crack in his door. "Are you going to open it? It sounds as if they might break it down." Mother's head turned to see both Jonas and me peering out of our rooms. She attempted a forced smile. "Yes, darling, I will open the door. I won't let anyone break down our door." The heels of her shoes echoed down the wooden floor of the hallway, and her long, thin skirt swayed about her ankles. Mother was elegant and beautiful. Stunning, in fact, with an unusually wide smile that lit up everything around her. I was fortunate to have Mother's honey-colored hair and her bright blue eyes. Jonas had her smile. Loud voices thundered from the foyer. "NKVD," whispered Jonas, growing pale. "Tadas said they took his neighbors away in a truck. They're arresting people." "No, not here," I replied. "The Soviet secret police had no business at our house." I walked down the hallway to listen and peeked around the corner. Jonas was right. 3 NKVD officers had Mother encircled. They wore blue hats with a red border and a gold star above the brim. A tall officer had our passports in his hand. "We need more time. We'll be ready in the morning," Mother said. 20 minutes. "Or you won't live to see morning," said the officer. "Please lower your voice. I have children," whispered Mother. 20 minutes, the officer barked. He threw his burning cigarette onto our clean living room floor and ground it into the wood with his boot. We were about to become cigarettes. Chapter 2. Were we being arrested? Where was Papa? I ran to my room. A loaf of fresh bread had appeared on my windowsill, a large wad of rubles tucked under the edge. Mother arrived at the door with Jonas clinging close behind her. "But Mother, where are we going? What have we done?" he asked. "It's a misunderstanding. Lina, are you listening? We must move quickly and pack all that is useful, but not necessarily dear to us. Do you understand? Lina! Clothes and shoes must be our priority. Try to fit all that you can into one suitcase." Mother looked toward the window. She quickly slid the bread and money onto the desk and snapped the curtain shut. Promise me that if anyone tries to help you, you will ignore them. We will resolve this ourselves. We must not pull family or friends into this confusion. Do you understand? Even if someone calls out to you, you must not respond. Are we being arrested? Began Jonas. Promise me. I promise, said Jonas softly. But where is Papa? Mother paused, her eyes blinking quickly. He will be meeting us. We have 20 minutes. Gather your things. Now! My bedroom began to spin. Mother's voice echoed inside my head. Now! Now! What was happening? The sound of my 10-year-old brother running about his room pulled a cord within my consciousness. I yanked my suitcase from the closet and opened it on my bed. Exactly a year before, the Soviets had begun moving troops over the borders into the country. Then, in August, Lithuania was officially annexed into the Soviet Union. When I complained at the dinner table, Papa yelled at me and told me to never, ever say anything derogatory about the Soviets. He sent me to my room. I didn't say anything out loud after that, but I thought about it a lot. Shoes, Jonas! Extra socks! A coat! I heard Mother yell down the hallway. I took our family photo from the shelf and placed the gold frame face up in the bottom of the empty suitcase. The faces stared back at me, happy, unaware. It was Easter 2 years before. Grandma was still alive. If we really were going to jail, I wanted to take her with me. But we couldn't be going to jail. We had done nothing wrong. Slams and bangs popped throughout the house. Lina, Mother said, rushing into the room, her arms loaded. Hurry! She threw open my closet and drawers, frantically throwing things, shoving things into my suitcase. Mother, I can't find my sketchbook. Where is it? I said, panicked. I don't know. We'll buy a new one. Pack your clothes. Hurry! Jonas ran into my room. He was dressed for school in his uniform and little tie, holding his book bag. His blonde hair was combed neatly over to the side. I'm ready, Mother, he said, his voice trembling. No, Mother stammered, choking on the word when she saw Jonas dressed for academy. She pulled in an uneven breath and lowered her voice. No, sweetheart. Your suitcase. Come with me. She grabbed him by the arm and ran down to his room. Lina, put on shoes and socks. Hurry! She threw my summer raincoat at me. I pulled it on. I put on my sandals and grabbed 2 books, hair ribbons, and my hairbrush. Where was my sketchbook? I took the writing tablet, the case of pens and pencils, and the bundle of rubles off my desk and placed them amongst the heap of items we had thrown into my case. I snapped the latches closed and rushed out of the room, the curtains blowing, flapping over the loaf of fresh bread still sitting on my desk. I saw my reflection in the glass door of the bakery and paused a moment. I had a dab of green paint on my chin. I scraped it off and pushed on the door. A bell tinkled overhead. The shop was warm and smelled of yeast. Lina, so good to see you. The woman rushed to the counter to assist me. What may I help you with? Did I know her? I'm sorry, I don't... My husband is a professor at the university. He works for your father, she said. I've seen you in town with your parents. I nodded. My mother asked me to pick up a loaf of bread, I said. Of course, said the woman, scurrying behind the counter. She wrapped a plump loaf in brown paper and handed it over to me. When I held out the money, she shook her head. Please, whispered the woman. We could never repay you as it is. I don't understand. I reached toward her with the coins. She ignored me. The bell jingled. Someone entered the shop. Give your parents our very best regards, said the woman, moving to assist the other customer. Later that night, I asked Papa about the bread. That was very kind of her, but unnecessary, he said. But what did you do? I asked him. Nothing, Lina. Have you finished your homework? But you must have done something to deserve free bread, I pressed.
I don't deserve anything. You stand for what is right, Lina, without the expectation of gratitude or reward. Now, off to your homework.
Chapter 3. Mother packed an equally large suitcase for Jonas. It dwarfed his small, thin frame, and he had to carry it with both hands, bending backward to lift it off the floor. He didn't complain of the weight or ask for help. The sound of breaking glass and china wailed through the house in quick intervals. We found our mother in the dining room, smashing all of her best crystal and china on the floor. Her face glistened with sweat, and her golden ringlets fell loose over her eyes. "Mama, no!" cried Jonas, running toward the broken shards that littered the floor. I pulled him back before he could touch the glass. "Mother, why are you breaking all your beautiful things?" I asked. She stopped and stared at the china cup in her hand. "Because I love them so much." She threw the cup to the floor, not even pausing to see it break before reaching for another. Jonas began to cry. "Don't cry, darling. We'll get much nicer things." The door burst open and three NKVD officers entered our house carrying rifles with bayonets. "What happened here?" demanded a tall officer surveying the damage. "It was an accident," Mother replied calmly. "You have destroyed Soviet property," he bellowed. Jonas pulled his suitcase close, fearful that any minute it too might become Soviet property. Mother looked in the foyer mirror to affix her loose curls and put on her hat. The NKVD officer slammed her in the shoulder with the butt of his rifle, throwing her face first into the mirror. "Bourgeois pigs, always wasting time. You won't need that hat," he scoffed. Mother righted and steadied herself, smoothing her skirt and adjusting her hat. "Pardon me," she said flatly to the officer before fixing her curls again and sliding her pearl hatpin into place. "Pardon me? Is that really what she said? These men burst into our home at night, slam her into the mirror, and she asks them to pardon her." Then she reached for it, the long gray coat, and suddenly I understood. She was playing the Soviet officers like a careful hand of cards, not quite sure what might be dealt next. I saw her in my mind, sewing jewelry, papers, silver, and other valuables into the coat under the lining. "I have to use the bathroom," I announced, trying to divert the attention from my mother in the coat. "You have 30 seconds." I shut the bathroom door and caught sight of my face in the mirror. I had no idea how quickly it was to change, to fade. If I had, I would have stared at my reflection, memorizing it. It was the last time I would look into a real mirror for more than a decade. Chapter 4. The street lamps had been turned off. It was nearly black in the road. The officers marched behind us, forcing us to keep pace with them. I saw Mrs. Raskunis peer out of her curtains. The moment she saw me looking, she disappeared. Mother nudged at my arm, which meant that I should keep my head down. Jonas was having a hard time carrying his suitcase. It was banging against his shins. "Davai!" commanded an officer. "Hurry, always hurry." We marched into the intersection of the street toward a large, dark object. It was a truck surrounded by more NKVD. As we approached the rear of the vehicle, I saw people sitting inside on their luggage.
"Boost me up before they do,"
Mother whispered quickly, not wanting an officer to touch her coat. I did as she asked. The officers pushed Jonas up. He fell on his face, his luggage thrown on top of him. I made it without falling, but when I stood up,
A woman looked at me and clasped her hand to her mouth. "Lina, dear, button your coat," instructed Mother. I looked down and saw my flowered nightgown. In the rush and search for my sketchbook, I had forgotten to change. I also saw a tall, wiry woman with a pointy nose looking at Jonas. Miss Grebus. She was a spinster teacher from school, one of the strict ones. I recognized a few others, the librarian, the owner of a nearby hotel, and several men I had seen Papa speaking with on the street. We were all on the list. I didn't know what the list was, only that we were on it. Apparently, so were the other 15 people sitting with us. The back gate of the truck slammed shut. A low moan came from a bald man in front of me. "We're all going to die," he said slowly. "We will surely die."
"Nonsense," said Mother quickly.
"But we will," he insisted. "This is the end."
The truck began to move, jerking forward quickly, throwing people off their seats. The bald man suddenly scrambled up, climbed the inside wall of the truck, and jumped out. He smashed onto the pavement, letting out a roar of pain like an animal caught in a trap. People in the truck screamed. The tires screeched to a halt, and the officers leapt out. They opened the back gate, and I saw the man writhing in pain on the ground. They lifted him up and hurled his crumpled body back into the truck. One of his legs looked mangled. Jonas buried his face in Mother's sleeve. I slipped my hand into his. He was shaking. My vision blurred. I squeezed my eyes shut, then opened them. The truck jerked forward, moving once again.
"No!"
the man wailed, holding his leg. The truck stopped in front of the hospital. Everyone seemed relieved that they would tend to the bald man's injuries. But they did not. They were waiting. A woman who was also on the list was giving birth to a baby. As soon as the umbilical cord was cut, they would both be thrown into the truck. Chapter 5. Nearly 4 hours passed. We sat in the dark in front of the hospital, unable to leave the vehicle. Other trucks passed, some with people covered in large restraining nets. The streets began to buzz with activity. "We were early," one of the men commented to Mother. He looked at his watch. "It's nearly 3 a.m. now." The bald man, lying on his back, turned his face toward Jonas.
"Boy, put your hands over my mouth and pinch my nose. Don't let go."
"He will do nothing of the sort," said Mother, pulling Jonas close.
"Foolish woman. Don't you realize this is just the beginning? We have a chance now to die with dignity."
"Elena," a voice hissed from the street. I saw Mother's cousin Regina hiding in the shadows. "Have you any relief now that you're on your back?" Mother asked the bald man.
"Elena!"
The voice appeared again, a little louder.
"Mother, I think she's calling you,"
I whispered, eyeing the NKVD smoking on the other side of the truck.
"She's not calling me. She's a crazy woman," Mother said loudly. "Be on your way and leave us alone," she yelled.
"But Elena, I..."
Mother turned her head and pretended she was deep in conversation with me, completely ignoring her cousin. A small bundle bounced into the bed of the truck near the bald man. His hand grabbed for it greedily.
"And you speak of dignity, sir?" said Mother.
She snapped the bundle out of his hands and put it under her legs. I wondered what was in the package. How could Mother call her own cousin a crazy woman? Regina had taken a great risk to find her. "You are the wife of Kostas Vilkas, provost at the university?" asked a man in a suit sitting down from us. Mother nodded, wringing her hands. I watched as Mother twisted her palms. Murmurs rose and fell in the dining room. The men had been sitting for hours. "Sweetheart," Take them the fresh pot of coffee, said Mother. I walked to the edge of the dining room. A cloud of cigarette smoke hovered over the table, held captive by the closed windows and drapes. Repatriate, if they can get away with it, said my father, stopping abruptly when he saw me in the doorway. Would anyone like more coffee? I asked, holding up the Stirling pot. Some men looked down. Someone coughed. Lina, you're turning into quite a young lady, said a friend of my father's from the university. And I hear that you're a very talented artist. Indeed, she is, said Papa. She has a very unique style, and she's exceptionally smart, he added with a wink. So she takes after her mother, then, joked one of the men. Everyone laughed. Tell me, Lina, said the man who wrote for the newspaper, what do you think of this new Lithuania? Well, interrupted my father quickly, that's not really conversation for a young girl now, is it? It will be conversation for everyone, Kostis, young and old, said the journalist. Besides, he said, smiling, it's not as if I'd printed in the paper. Papa shifted in his chair. What do I think of the Soviets' annexation? I paused, avoiding eye contact with my father. I think Joseph Stalin is a bully. I think we should push his troops out of Lithuania. They shouldn't be allowed to come and take what they please, and that's enough, Lina. Leave the pot of coffee and join your mother in the kitchen. But it's true, I pressed. It's not right. Enough, said my father. I returned to the kitchen, stopping short to eavesdrop. Don't encourage her, Vladis. The girl is so headstrong, it scares me to death, said Papa. Well, replied the journalist, now we see how she takes after her father, don't we? You've raised a real partisan, Kostis. Papa was silent. The gathering ended and the men left the house at alternating intervals, some through the front door and some through the back. The university? Said the bald man, still wincing with pain. Oh, well, he's long gone then. My stomach contracted, like someone had punched me. Jonas turned a desperate face to Mother. Actually, I work at the bank, and I saw your father just this afternoon, said a man, smiling at Jonas. I knew he was lying. Mother gave the man a grateful nod. Saw him on his way to the grave, then, said the surly bald man. I glared at him, wondering how much glue it would take to keep his mouth shut. I am a stamp collector. A simple stamp collector, and they're delivering me to my death because I correspond internationally with other collectors. A university man would certainly be near the top of the list for... Shut up! I blurted. Lina, said Mother. You must apologize immediately. This poor gentleman is in terrible pain. He doesn't know what he is saying. I know exactly what I'm saying, the man replied, staring at me. The hospital doors opened and a great cry erupted from within. An NKVD officer dragged a barefoot woman in a bloodied hospital gown down the steps. My baby! Please don't hurt my baby! She screamed. Another officer walked out carrying a swaddled bundle. A doctor came running, grabbing at the officer. Please, you cannot take the newborn. It won't survive, yelled the doctor. Sir, I beg you, please. The officer turned to the doctor and kicked the heel of his boot into the doctor's kneecap. They lifted the woman into the truck. Mother and Miss Grebus scrambled to make room for her lying next to the bald man. The baby was handed up. Lina, please, Mother said, passing the pink child to me. I held the bundle and instantly felt the warmth of its little body penetrating through my coat. Oh, God, please, my baby, cried the woman, looking up at me. The child let out a soft cry, and its tiny fists pummeled the air. Its fight for life had begun. Chapter 6. The man who worked at the bank gave Mother his jacket. She wrapped the suit coat around the woman's shoulders and smoothed her hair away from her face. "It's all right, dear," said Mother to the young woman.
"Vitas! They took my husband, Vitas!" breathed the woman.
I looked down at the little pink face in the bundle. A newborn. The child had been alive only minutes, but was already considered a criminal by the Soviets. I clutched the baby close and put my lips on its forehead. Jonas leaned against me. If they would do this to a baby, what would they do to us?
"What is your name, dear?" said Mother.
"Ona." She craned her neck.
"Where is my child?"
Mother took the child from me and laid the bundle on the woman's chest.
"Oh, my baby, my sweet baby," cried the woman, kissing the infant.
The truck lurched forward. She looked at Mother with pleading eyes.
"My leg," wailed the bald man.
"Do any of you have medical training?" asked Mother, scanning the faces in the truck. The people shook their heads. Some wouldn't even look up.
"I'll try to make a splint," said the man from the bank. "Does anyone have anything straight I can use? Please, let's help one another."
People shifted uncomfortably in the truck, thinking about what they might have in their bags.
"Sir," said Jonas, leaning around me.
He held out his little ruler from school. The old woman who had gasped at my nightgown began to cry.
"Well, yes, that's very good, thank you," said the man, accepting the ruler.
"Thank you, darling," said Mother, smiling at Jonas.
"A ruler? You're going to set my leg with a little ruler? Have you all gone mad?" screeched the bald man. "It's the best we can do at the moment," said the man from the bank. "Does anyone have something to tie it with?" "Someone just shoot me, please," yelled the bald man.
Mother pulled the silk scarf from her neck and handed it to the man from the bank. The librarian slid the knot from her scarf as well, and Miss Grievous dug in her bag. Blood began to soak through the front of Ona's hospital gown. I felt nauseous. I closed my eyes and tried to think of something, anything, to calm myself. I pictured my sketchbook. I felt my hands stir. Images like celluloid frames rolled through my mind. Our house. Mother adjusting Papa's tie in the kitchen. The lily of the valley. Grandma. Her face soothed me somehow. I thought of the photo tucked in my suitcase. "Grandma," I thought, "help us." We arrived at a small train depot in the countryside. Soviet trucks filled the rail yard, packed with people just like ours. We drove alongside a truck with a man and a woman leaning out. The woman's face was streaked with tears.
"Paulina!" the man yelled. "Do you have our daughter, Paulina?"
I shook my head as we passed.
"Why are we at a countryside depot and not Kaunas Station?" asked an old woman.
"It's probably easier to organize us with our families. The main station is so busy, you know," said Mother. Mother's voice lacked certainty. She was trying to convince herself. I looked around. The station was tucked in a deserted area surrounded by dark woods. I pictured a rug being lifted and a huge Soviet broom sweeping us under it.
Chapter 7.
"Davai!"
yelled an NKVD officer as he opened the back gate of the truck. The train yard swarmed with vehicles, officers, and people with luggage. The noise level grew with each passing moment. Mother leaned down and put her hands on our shoulders.
"Stay close to me. Hold on to my coat if you need to. We must not be separated."
Jonas grabbed onto Mother's coat.
"Davai!"
yelled the officer, yanking one of the men off the truck and pushing him to the ground. Mother and the man from the bank began to help the rest. I held the infant while they brought Ona down. The bald man twisted in pain as he was carried off the truck.
The man from the bank approached an NKVD officer.
We have people who need medical attention. Please get a doctor.
The officer ignored the man.
Doctor! Nurse! We need medical assistance!
Shouted the man into the crowd. The officer grabbed the man from the bank, stuck a rifle in his back, and began to march him away.
My luggage! He yelled.
The librarian grabbed the man's suitcase, but before she could run to him, he had disappeared into the crowd. A Lithuanian woman stopped and said she was a nurse. She began tending to Ona and the bald man while we all stood in a circle around them. The train yard was dusty. Ona's bare feet were already caked in dirt. Hordes of people passed by, threading through one another with desperate faces. I saw a girl from school pass by with her mother. She raised her arm to wave, but her mother covered her eyes as she approached our group.
Davai! Barked an officer.
We can't leave these people, said Mother. You must get a stretcher.
The officer laughed. You can carry them.
We did. Two men from the truck carried the wailing bald man. I carried the baby in a suitcase while Mother helped Ona walk. Jonas struggled with the rest of the luggage, and Miss Grievous and the librarian helped. We reached the train platform. The chaos was palpable. Families were being separated. Children screamed and mothers pleaded. Two officers pulled a man away. His wife would not let go and was dragged for several feet before being kicked away. The librarian took the baby from me.
Mother, is Papa here?
Asked Jonas, still clutching her coat. I wondered the same thing. When and where had the Soviets dragged my father away? Was it on his way to work? Or maybe at the newspaper stand during his lunch hour? I looked at the masses of people on the train platform. There were elderly people. Lithuania cherished its elders, and here they were being herded like animals.
Davai!
An NKVD officer grabbed Jonas by the shoulders and began to drag him away.
No!
Screamed Mother. They were taking Jonas. My beautiful, sweet brother, who shooed bugs out of the house instead of stepping on them, who gave his little ruler to splint a crotchety old man's leg.
Mama! Lina!
He cried, flailing his arms.
Stop!
I screamed, tearing after them. Mother grabbed the officer and began speaking in Russian, pure, fluent Russian. He stopped and listened. She lowered her voice and spoke calmly. I couldn't understand a word. The officer jerked Jonas toward him. I grabbed onto his other arm. His body began to vibrate as sobs racked his shoulders. A big wet spot appeared on the front of his trousers. He hung his head and cried. Mother pulled a bundle of rubles from her pocket and exposed it slightly to the officer. He reached for it and then said something to Mother, motioning with his head. Her hand flew up and ripped the amber pendant right from her neck and pressed it into the NKVD's hand. He didn't seem to be satisfied. Mother continued to speak in Russian and pulled a pocket watch from her coat. I knew that watch. It was her father's, and had his name engraved in the soft gold on the back. The officer snatched the watch, let go of Jonas, and started yelling at the people next to us. Have you ever wondered what a human life is worth? That morning, my brother's was worth a pocket watch. Chapter 8. It's okay, darling. We're all okay, said Mother, hugging Jonas, kissing his face in tears. Right, Lina? We're all okay. Right, I said quietly. Jonas, still crying, put his hands in front of his trousers, humiliated by the wetness. Don't worry about that, my love. We'll get you a change of clothes, said Mother, moving in front of him to shield his embarrassment. Lina, give your brother your coat. I peeled off my coat and handed it to Mother.
See? You'll just wear this for a short while. Mother, why did he want to take me away?
asked Jonas. I don't know, dear, but we're together now. Together. There we stood on the train platform amidst the chaos. Me in my flowered nightgown and my brother in a baby blue summer coat that nearly touched the ground. As ridiculous as we must have looked, no one even glanced at us.
Mrs. Vilkas, hurry!
It was the nasal voice of Miss Grievous, the spinster teacher from school. She urged us toward her.
We're over here! Hurry now! They're splitting people up!
Mother grabbed Jonas's hand.
Come, children!
We made our way through the crowd like a small boat cutting through a storm, unsure if we'd be sucked in or stay afloat. Red wooden train cars lined the platform, stretching in links as far as the eye could see. They were crudely built and dirty, the kind that would haul livestock. Masses of Lithuanians thronged toward them with their belongings. Mother maneuvered us through the crowd, pushing and pulling our shoulders. I saw white knuckles clutching suitcases. People were on their knees crying, tying erupting bags with twine while officers stepped on the contents. Wealthy farmers and their families carried buckets of slopping milk and rounds of cheese. A small boy walked by holding a sausage nearly as big as his body. He dropped it and immediately disappeared underfoot in the crowd. A woman bumped my arm with a sterling candlestick while a man ran by holding an accordion. I thought of our beautiful things, smashed on the floor at our house.
Hurry! Shouted Miss Grievous, gesturing to us. This is the Vilkas family, she said to an officer holding a clipboard. They're in this car!
Mother stopped in front of the car and scanned the crowd intently. Please, said her eyes, as she searched for our father.
Mother, whispered Jonas, these cars are for pigs and cows. Yes, I know. We'll have a little adventure, won't we?
She boosted Jonas up into the car, and then I heard the sounds. A baby crying and a man moaning.
Mother, no, I said. I don't want to be with those people.
Stop it, Lina. They need our help.
Can't someone else help them? We need help, too.
Mother, said Jonas, worried the train would begin to move. You're coming in, aren't you?
Yes, darling. We're coming. Can you take this bag? Mother turned to me.
Lina, we haven't a choice. Please do the best you can not to frighten your brother.
Miss Grievous reached down for Mother.
What about me? I was frightened too. Didn't that matter? Papa, where are you?
I looked around the train platform, which was now in complete pandemonium. I thought about running until I couldn't run anymore. I'd run to the university to look for Papa. I'd run to our house. I'd just run.
Lina!
Mother stood in front of me now and lifted my chin.
I know. This is horrible, she whispered. We must stay together. It's very important.
She kissed my forehead and turned me toward the train car.
Where are we going?
I asked.
I don't know yet. Do we have to be in these cattle cars?
Yes, but I'm sure it won't be for long, said Mother. Chapter 9. The inside of the car was stuffy and full of personal smells, even with the door open. People were wedged in everywhere, sitting on their belongings. At the end of the car, large planks of wood, approximately 6 feet deep, had been installed as shelves. Ona lay on one of the planks, peaked, the baby crying on her chest.
Ow! The bald man smacked my leg. Watch it, girl! You almost stepped on me!
Where are the men?
Mother asked Miss Grievous.
They took them away, she replied.
We'll need men in this car to help with the injured, said Mother.
There aren't any. We're sorted into groups of some kind. They're bringing people and shoving them in. There are some elderly men, but they haven't any strength, said Miss Grievous.
Mother looked around the car. Let's put the little ones on the top plank. Lina, move Ona on that bottom plank so we can fit some more of the children.
Don't be a fool, woman, barked the bald man. If you make room, they'll just cram more people in here.
The librarian was shorter than me and stocky. She was strong and helped move Ona. I'm Mrs. Rimmis, she said to Ona. Mrs., she was married too. Where was her husband? Perhaps with Papa. The baby gave a blistering yell. Is your little one a boy or a girl? Asked Mrs. Rimmis. A girl, said Ona weakly. She shifted her bare feet on the wooden plank. They were cut and full of dirt. She'll need to eat soon, said Mrs. Rimmis. I looked around the car. My head felt detached from my body. More people pushed into the small space, including a woman with a boy my age. I felt a tug.
Are you going to sleep now?
Asked a small girl with hair the color of pearls. What?
You're in your nightgown. Are you going to sleep?
She thrust a tattered doll toward me.
This is my dolly.
My nightgown. I was still in my nightgown. Jonas was still in my baby blue coat. I had completely forgotten. I pushed toward Jonas and Mother. We need to change our clothes, I said.
There's no room to open our suitcases, said Mother. And there's nowhere to change. Please, said Jonas, pulling my coat tightly around him.
Mother tried to move toward the corner of the car, but it was useless. She bent down and opened my suitcase, a slight crack. Her hand dipped in and out, searching for something. I saw my pink sweater and a slip. Finally, she pulled out my dark blue cotton dress. She then searched for pants for Jonas.
Excuse me, madam, she said to a woman sitting in the corner of the car. Could we trade places with you so my children can change their clothes?
This is our spot, announced the woman. We're not moving.
Her two daughters looked up at us.
I realize it's your spot. It would just be for a moment, so my children have a bit of privacy.
The woman said nothing and folded her arms across her chest. Mother thrust us near the corner, almost on top of the woman.
Hey!
Said the woman, throwing up her hands.
Oh, yes, so sorry, just for a bit of privacy.
Mother took my coat from Jonas and held it up to shield us. I changed quickly and then used my nightgown to make an additional changing curtain for Jonas.
He peed,
said one of the girls, pointing at my brother. Jonas froze.
You peed, little girl?
I said loudly.
Oh, poor thing.
The temperature in the car had risen steadily since we had climbed in. The wet scent of an armpit hung in front of my face. We forged our way near the door, hoping for some air. We stacked our suitcases, and Jonas sat on top, holding the bundle from our cousin Regina. Mother stood on her toes, trying to look out onto the train platform for Papa.
Here, said a gray-haired man, putting a small case on the floor. Stand on this.
That's very kind, said Mother, accepting. How long has it been? He asked.
Since yesterday, she said.
What does he do? Said the man.
He's provost at the university. Kostas Vilkas?
Ah, yes, Vilkas, the man nodded.
He looked at us. His eyes were kind.
Beautiful children.
Yes, they look just like their father, she said. We all sat together on the velvet settee. Jonas on Papa's lap. Mother wore her green silk dress with the full skirt. Her yellow hair fell in shiny waves against the side of her face, and her emerald earrings sparkled under the lights. Papa wore one of his new dark suits. I had chosen my cream-colored dress with the brown satin sash and a matching ribbon for my hair.
What a handsome family, said the photographer, positioning his large camera.
Kostas, Lina looks just like you.
Poor girl, teased Papa. Let's hope she grows out of it and ends up like her mother.
One can only hope, I teased back. Everyone erupted in laughter. The flash went off.
Chapter 10. I counted the people. 46 packed in a cage on wheels, maybe a rolling coffin. I used my fingers to sketch the image in a layer of dirt on the floor near the front of the train car, wiping the drawings away and starting over again and again. People chattered about our possible destination. Some said NKVD headquarters, others thought Moscow. I scanned the group. Faces spoke to their future. I saw courage, anger, fear, and confusion. Others were hopeless. They had already given up. Which was I? Jonas swatted flies away from his face and hair. Mother spoke quietly to the woman with the son my age. "Where are you from?" the boy asked Jonas. He had wavy brown hair and blue eyes. He looked like one of the popular boys from school. "Kaunas," said Jonas. "Where are you from?" "Shanshe." We looked at each other, silent and awkward. "Where is your dad?" blurted Jonas. "In the Lithuanian army," the boy paused. "He's been gone for a while." His mother looked like an officer's wife, fancy and unaccustomed to dirt. Jonas continued to chatter before I could tell him to stop. "Our father works at the university. I'm Jonas, this is my sister Lina." The boy nodded at me. "I'm Andris Arvidus." I nodded in return and looked away. "Do you think they'd let us get out, even for a few minutes?" asked Jonas. "That way, if Papa's here at the station, he'll see us. He can't find us now."
"The NKVD won't let us do much of anything," said Andris. "I saw them beat someone who tried to run."
"They called us pigs," said my brother.
"Don't listen to them, Jonas. They're the pigs. They're stupid pigs," I said.
"Shh. I wouldn't say that," said Andris.
"What are you, the police?" I asked. Andris raised his eyebrows.
"No. I just don't want you to get in trouble."
"Don't get us in trouble, Lina," said Jonas.
I looked over toward Mother. "I gave them everything I had. I lied and told them he was feeble-minded. I had no choice," whispered Andris's mother.
"They would have split us up. Now I have nothing, not even a crumb."
"I know," said Mother, reaching out to the woman. "They did the same with us, and my boy is only 10 years old. Ona's baby wailed. Mrs. Rimmis made her way over to Mother.
"She's trying to feed the child, but something's wrong," said Mrs. Rimmis. "The baby's mouth won't latch properly."
Hours passed like long days. People cried of heat and hunger. The bald man griped about his pain while others tried to organize the space and luggage. I had to surrender my dirt canvas on the floor and instead used my fingernail to carve drawings on the wall. Andris jumped down from the car to go to the bathroom, but was punched and thrown back in by the NKVD. We all cringed with each gunshot or scream. No one dared leave the car again. Someone discovered a hole the size of a plate in the corner where the stubborn woman sat with her daughters. They'd been hiding the hole in the fresh air that came from it. People descended upon her, insisting she move. After she had been dragged off the spot, we all took turns using the hole to go to the bathroom. Some just couldn't bring themselves to do it. The sounds and smells made my head spin. A young boy hung his head from the car and vomited. Mrs. Rimmis organized the children and began to tell stories. The young kids scrambled toward the librarian. Even the two daughters left their grouchy mother and sat mesmerized by the fantastic tales. The girl with the dolly leaned against Mrs. Rimmis and sucked her thumb. We sat in a circle on the library floor. One of the younger boys lay on his back, sucking his thumb. The librarian turned through the picture book, reading with an animated voice. I listened and drew the characters in my little notebook. I drew the dragon and my heart began to beat faster. He was alive. I felt a wave of heat from his fiery breath coming at me, blowing my hair back. Then I drew the princess running, her beautiful golden hair tumbling down the mountainside. "Lina, are you ready to go?" I looked up, The librarian hovered over me. All of the children were gone. Lina, are you okay? You're flushed. You're not feeling ill, are you? I shook my head and held up my notebook. Oh, my word! Lina, did you draw that? The librarian quickly reached for the pad. I nodded, smiling. Chapter 11. The sun began to set. Mother braided my wavy, sweaty hair. I tried to count how many hours we had spent in the prison box and wondered how many more we had to go. People ate the food they had brought, most shared, some didn't.
Lina, that loaf of bread, Mother began.
I shook my head. Was that loaf of bread still there, sitting on my desk?
I don't have the bread, I replied.
All right, said Mother, taking some food to Ona. Her lips pursed. She was disappointed. Andrus sat with his knees drawn up, smoking a cigarette. He was staring at me. How old are you? I asked. 17, he continued to stare. How long have you been smoking? What are you, the police? He said and looked away. Night came. It was dark in our wooden box. Mother said we should be thankful they left the door open. I wasn't about to thank the NKVD for anything. Every few minutes I heard their boots marching by. I couldn't sleep. I wondered if there was a moon out, and if so, what it looked like. Papa said scientists speculated that from the moon, the earth looked blue. That night, I believed it. I would draw it blue and heavy with tears. Where was Papa? I closed my eyes. Something bumped my shoulder. I opened my eyes. It was lighter in the train car. Andrus stood above, nudging me with his shoe. He put his finger to his lips and motioned with his head. I looked over at Mother. She slept, clutching her coat tightly around her. Jonas was gone. My head snapped around, looking for my brother. Andrus kicked me again and waved me forward. I got up and stepped between the human bundles toward the door of the train car. Jonas stood at the opening, clutching the side.
Andrus said that an hour ago, a long train came in. Someone told him it was full of men, whispered Jonas. Maybe Papa is on it.
Who told you that? I asked Andrus.
Don't worry who told me, he said. Let's look for our fathers.
I looked down off the train. The sun had just appeared on the horizon. If Papa was at the train station, I wanted to find him.
I'll go and let you know what I find out, I said. Where is the train that pulled in?
In back of us.
But you're not going, said Andrus. I'll go.
How are you going to find my father? You don't know what he looks like, I snapped.
Are you always so pleasant? Said Andrus.
Maybe you can both go, suggested Jonas.
I can go by myself, I said. I'll find Papa and bring him to our car.
This is ridiculous. We're wasting time. I shouldn't have woken you up, said Andrus. I looked out of the train car. The guard was 100 feet away, his back to me. I hung down off the edge and dropped quietly to the ground, scrambling under the train. Andrus beat me there. Suddenly, we heard a yelp and saw Jonas jumping down. Andrus grabbed him and we tried to hide behind one of the wheels, peeking under the train. The NKVD officer stopped and turned around. I put my hand over Jonas's mouth. We crouched near the wheel, afraid to breathe. The officer resumed walking. Andrus peeked out the other side and waved us on. I crawled out. The back of our train car had Russian writing on it. Thieves and prostitutes, Andrus whispered. That's what it says. Thieves and prostitutes. Our mothers were in that car, along with a teacher, a librarian, elderly people, and a newborn baby. Thieves and prostitutes. Jonas looked at the writing. I grabbed his hand, thankful he couldn't read Russian. I wished he had stayed on the train. Another line of red cattle wagons sat on the tracks behind ours. The doors, however, were closed and locked with large bolts. We looked around, then ran under the other train, dodging the splatters of waste. Andris knocked on the bottom near a bathroom hole. A shadow appeared. "What's your father's name?" Andris asked me. "Kostas Vilkas," I said quickly. "We're looking for Patris Arvidas and Kostas Vilkas," he whispered. The head disappeared. We heard scuffling on the floor of the car. The head reappeared.
"Not in this car. Be careful, children. Be very quiet."
We scurried from car to car, dodging droppings and knocking. Each time a head disappeared, I felt my stomach tighten. "Please, please, please," Jonas would say, and then we'd move on, with warnings of caution or messages for loved ones. We reached the 7th car. The man's head disappeared. It was quiet inside.
"Please, please, please," said Jonas.
"Jonas?"
"Papa,"
we said, trying not to raise our voices. A match scraped across a wood plank. Papa's face appeared in the hole. He looked gray and his eye was badly bruised.
"Papa, we're in a car over there," began Jonas. "Come with us."
"Shh," said Papa. "I can't. You shouldn't be here. Where is your mother?" "In the car," I said, happy yet horrified to see my father's bludgeoned face. "Are you all right?"
"I'm okay," he said. "Are you okay? Is your mother okay?"
"We're okay," I said.
"She doesn't know we're here," said Jonas. "We wanted to find you. Papa, they broke into our house and..."
"I know. They're attaching our train to yours."
"Where are they taking us?" I asked.
"To Siberia, I think."
"Siberia? That couldn't be right. Siberia was half a world away. There was nothing in Siberia." I heard Papa talking inside the train car. His arm came out of the hole holding some scrunched up material.
"Take this jacket and these socks. You'll need them."
More noise came from inside. Papa handed out another jacket, 2 shirts, and more socks. He then handed down a large piece of ham.
"Children, split this. Eat it," Papa said.
I hesitated and stared at the ham my father handed through the same hole people used as a toilet.
"Put it in your mouths right now," he said.
I tore the thick piece of ham in quarters and handed some to Jonas and Andris. I put the last piece in my dress pocket for Mother.
"Lina, take this and give it to your mother. Tell her it's okay to sell it if she has to."
Papa's hand came down to me, holding his gold wedding band. I stared at it.
"Lina, do you understand? Tell her it's in case she needs money."
I wanted to tell him we had already traded a pocket watch for Jonas. I nodded and put the ring on my thumb, not able to swallow the ham past the lump in my throat.
"Sir," said Andris, "is Patris Arvidas in your car?"
"I'm sorry, son. He's not," said Papa. "This is very dangerous. You must all get back to your train."
I nodded. "Jonas,